As part of Filipino Heritage Month, we decided to take a closer look at a story we ran about a documentary underway. It's about one of the bloodiest labor strikes in Hawaii. The University of Hawaii Oral History Center collected interviews back in the 70s about the strike that left 16 Filipino workers dead. It was the Hanapepe Massacre. Mauro Plateros was a Filipino plantation worker on Kauai when he joined fellow Visayans in the 1924 strike. Some of the strikers weren't happy that Ilocanos weren't participating. The strikers caught two Ilocano workers who passed by their strike camp who they believed were insulting them. Plateros witnessed it firsthand and recounts his story.
Where were you now when the Ilocanos first got caught? Were you?
I was down there. And when I was living here and the Ilocano was about 20 feet from me.
How did they bring him inside?
I think somebody was trying to, I think he had some punching, I think, but it was not so bad, but it was light punching on me. Because he had no reason to punch him then, because he didn't try to fight them.
Had the Ilocanos been bothering the strikers or calling them names, or do you know why brought him inside?
He just passing by every time on the strike camp. This is the yard here. Uh-huh. We are squatting here, and this the road. They always pass by. Yeah, and they know that kind of way. We don't like them so because they never join us.
Right.
That's why some people think they are insulting us. So that's why you know that the second guider on the strikers called Lorenzo.
Lorenzo.
Okay. Yeah, you better capture that man.
The night the two were captured, Sheriff William Crowell went to arrest the two men, essentially putting them in protective custody. The strikers refused. The sheriff returned the next day with special police forces and sharpshooters. And according to Plateros, the strikers were only armed with cane knives and a pistol with no bullets. A shot rang out, however, and chaos ensued, leaving 16 dead. Plateros ran and hid. He only returned to the camp because his wife and baby were still there. He was later arrested. We reach out to CLEAR, the Center for Labor Education and Research at West Oahu, to help provide some context for this strike. Director Bill Pewitt credits Kauai student Stu Burley with researching and helping to track down documents that led to a better picture of what really happened that day in 1924. He also talked about the community role that leader Pablo Manglapit played in labor organizing.
Between the two of us, we started putting together materials. I was able to find a 1923 map, geographical survey map, that had a site listed on it that seemed to coincide with all of the stories, but was different from most of the actual narratives that had been written by other people, which thought that they were buried at in Makaveli. There's a Catholic church, and they thought it was going to be over there. Because the Catholic priest officiated. And so just kind of, I think there was a deduction made by a lot of people that it was at the Catholic cemetery at that church. And so, I actually went to that church and talked to the people who were there, and they said they have no record of any burials from that, you know, as a result of that. And they have some burials that go even further back. So anyway, then again, looking at the map that I got, the 1923 survey map, and in the articles, there were several places where they mentioned that the funeral took place right next to the Chinese. One of the officers who was shot was Chinese, and their funerals were like right next to each other, about 100 yards off. And so looking at the survey map, I found by what is today really close to the Oahu Veterans Cemetery, this graveyard that was marked Chinese Filipino, right? So, and it had a line, the Chinese on one side and the Filipinos on the other. So, and it really corresponded to all the descriptions about where it was and what its relationship was to the, you know, to Hanapepe and the bay and so forth.
So at
and
that point, you knew you
so
were onto something.
I was pretty sure we had that. So that's the material I shared with Stu, and Stu was able to find a caretaker for that cemetery, and the caretaker was a nephew, I guess, of the of a caretaker who was there at the time period, and had said that they had unearthed some skulls one time when they were digging another grave. And that they realized, oh, you know, this is bad. So they put them all back and reburied them. And so I went over specifically to go with Stu and look at the different sites. And one of our goals was that there was a memorial put in a park in Hanapepe. But that memorial is nowhere near any of the events of the actual story. And the two primary events are where the shooting took place and where they're buried. We really were looking at the possibility of interesting the Filipino community and the state and everybody to establish and verify, confirm that that's where the burials were, because the evidence was pretty overwhelming. And then to try to get a memorial plaque there and also on the road, you know, by across the old Hanapepe Bridge, you know, what was then the Japanese school and is now somebody's home where the shooting actually took place. I thought there should be a roadside
a plaque or a memorial
or something, you know,
yeah,
to indicate this is where that happened. But we're totally unsuccessful at getting that. And I did talk to a bunch of people. One of the HGA business agents was trying to help me get contacts with the State Department of Health and archaeologist, and we basically didn't get very far.
How long ago was that?
And that was in 2006.
Okay.
So then this group, the Congress of Visayan Organizations, they asked me to come over in 2015 to lead a group to look at the sites, because they're the Visayan, you know, organizations. And so I went over at that time period and did a little tour. We started at the site of the shooting, and then we went over to the graveyard. And I was disturbed because some of the places that were identified by Stuart looked like they had fresh graves on them. And so, you know, but nothing could be confirmed because there is no excavation. But like I say, all of the documentary evidence was pointing right there.
So when you heard that the team that was working on this documentary did the ground-penetrating radar and found some disturbances, what was your reaction?
Right. Well, a good friend of mine over there who was working with the team, Ray Catania, okay, was asking me about it. And I said, yeah, definitely I think it's a good idea to do the radar. But I said, don't be totally disappointed. In other words, it's not you're not going to be able to prove they weren't buried there, because who knows? Somebody could have, you know, actually in the meantime with those fresh graves, could have dug them up and reburied them or just disposed of them. So the fact that you don't find anything wouldn't necessarily have disqualified the site.
So you cautioned
them. So I cautioned them about that. So they went anyway, and I'm glad they did, because that's the first real confirmation we have. And it doesn't look like anybody's going to get permission to do any excavation. I fully understand that, you know, disturbing graves. That's something, you know, it's a hard step to go for. It's very sensitive, and I understand that. But, you know, at the time period in 2006, that was not an option, the ground-penetrating radar.
But the main thing now is that there be some kind of marker,
yeah,
an acknowledgement.
Right. And so working with some of the Filipino groups over there, Michael Miranda and so forth, and trying to, you know, who I think are great, that they're actually, Michael Miranda, who's another member of the team, was one of the people who was on the tour with the Congress of Visayan organizations back in 2015. So he's very kind, and he told me where they're going with it. They have some problems trying to get the plaque on the road because it's property that's currently in the process of being perhaps sold to the county. But certainly the site should be a memorial for
and
that.
And share with our listeners the importance of this particular labor strike.
Sort of the major theme in Hawaii's labor history is that it started off with a lot of, we say racial, but it's more ethnic divides, okay? Some of that was pretty clearly intentional on the part of the employers because, you know, first there were Chinese, and then the Chinese Exclusion Act stopped that, so they couldn't bring Chinese, so they were desperately, you know, flailing around, and they brought and they brought Japanese. They brought a lot of Japanese. Conditions were ripe in Japan at that time period after the Meiji Restoration, that there were a lot of displaced farmers, so they were able to bring lots of Japanese over. That had the unexpected consequence that the Japanese were able to organize, and a lot of the early strikes were Japanese strikes. Specifically. And they started sometimes just plantation and then grew to, there were Oahu-wide, strikes and on the neighbor islands as well. And so the planters, and particularly after a 1906 Japanese strike, were looking for another source of labor. So the Philippines, they tried Korea, it didn't quite work out. The numbers and the motivations weren't there to bring large numbers. But in the Philippines, there were. So we started to see a lot of Filipinos coming in to supplement the Japanese large numbers.
But unlike the Japanese, when we're talking the Philippines, there are all these different dialects.
Yeah. Right. That was a huge problem for the Filipinos, because the Japanese, on one hand, even though they were from a lot from Okinawa and they were little different places, but they all spoke the same language. There was no communication barriers between them and like that. But the Filipinos, there were, because in the Philippines, there are, I read someplace, 130 actual separate dialect languages, and they're quite different from each other. And although just before that they had adopted Tagalog as the national language, it was still not that common that everybody was going to do this. And particularly when they brought the people in to work in Hawaii, a lot of them were Visayan, and then later they brought in Ilocanos.
And that's what the crux was in
and
this
that was
massacre.
The crux of this particular incident. You know, whether massacre is the right term or not, I got criticized. I wrote a book on Hilo, which I still feel justified the term, even though there were no deaths, but because the police were the only ones who had arms, and exercised that kind of
force. They shot a bunch
of workers.
They
shot 50 people. But in this one, Reinecke calls it the Battle of Hanapepe, because they fought back. In 1920, we had what is often called the dual union strike. There were Japanese and Filipinos tried to coordinate a strike. Manlapit, that was his first attempt, and it was kind of a crushing failure on the Filipino side. He wasn't able to get them coordinated, and primarily that was on Oahu, so it was an Oahu strike.
And they were fighting for wages.
They were, yeah. Each one of the groups had their own, the Japanese called it a higher wage association. The Filipinos at that time in 1920 called it the Filipino Labor Union. All right. But after that strike, which, bottomed out and people, recriminations, there was clearly tactics specifically designed to pit the Filipinos against the Japanese and sow seeds of distrust among the different groups of each other, which were successful. And in this early period, one of the things that's interesting is that, by the 1930s, we start to see later on, that's why it's important, that this kind of ethnic strikes were exclusive to a particular community were doomed. They were never going to be able to have a success in organizing unless they came together.
Ethnic divide in our sugar history and united we stand is what you often hear on the strike lines in current day. That was Bill Pewitt, director of the Center for Labor Education and Research, talking about the significance of the 1924 Hanapepe strike massacre. Efforts are underway to erect a marker at the massacre site and at the gravesite of the 16 Filipino sugar workers.